Off the Ball, GAA.
I don't think it's possible or realistic. Like, I think it's cod-like.
Why not?
Honest, like, I just, because that is not going to happen. The only people losing out really are going to be players. Like.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. You're listening to Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
Yeah! Hiya, it's Emma Carroll here, bringing you another bite-sized chunk of Off the Ball Breakfast. I hope you've had a good week. I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to know from this week's show. Now, today there's going to be a hearing in what could be the biggest case in football transfer since the Bosnian rule. Philippe Auclair explains how the Lazaro Diarra case could change football forever.
And if Diarra wins, the whole transfer system has got to be rethought from A to Z. And what happened is basically Lassana Diarra, who had had a, you know, very good career, if a little bit quixotic at times, at Chelsea, at Arsenal, at Real Madrid, made an absolute disastrous choice, career choice, when he was still young and still a French international with Raymond Domenech. He went to Russia and he went to Angie Makashkala. And I can think of a few million reasons why he went there. But then it didn't quite work right for him at Angie, or rather it worked okay. And Lokomotiv Moscow were interested in him and bought him for about 20 million euros, which was quite a sum for a defensive midfielder at the time. We're talking 2014. Things started to go wrong with his manager, and it became an open conflict. And Lassana Diarra has always had the reputation of being somebody who knows what he wants and is not going to be particularly, he knows how to get it. But there was a tug of war between Lokomotiv Moscow and Lassana Diarra. And Lassana Diarra and started to shirk off training sessions, according to the player, because he was injured. But Lokomotiv Moscow said, you're not injured, you haven't seen our own doctor. Anyway, they decided to resiliate, cancel the contract, terminate the contract, and which they did. And then they sued the player because they said he's basically made so many bad decisions when he was a Lokomotiv. He refused to collaborate, refused to train. He was impossible. He basically didn't do what he was supposed to do as a professional footballer. So they said, we're suing you, my friend. And we're suing you for the amount of money we paid Angie Makashkala, because basically we were sold the wrong goods. FIFA found in favor of Lokomotiv. It went to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, which also found in favor of the club, but divided the money that he had been fined, 20 million euros, the full whack, by two. And he also had a suspension. It basically killed his career. And he had one offer in particular from a club called Sporting Charleroi. And Sporting Charleroi said, OK, we're interested in you, but we want one thing, is that we don't want to have to pay this compensation. And they were not able to see if they would pay this compensation or not. So they pulled out. So Diarra is suing, with the help of FIFPro, is suing FIFA, but he's also suing Charleroi, and he's suing the Belgian League. The Advocate General of the Court of Justice of the European Union made published an opinion which is very much in favor of Diarra. Now, the court won't necessarily go the way of the Advocate General. It's happened in the past that they went another way. But should they go the way that the Advocate General want them to go, Diarra is going to win. And if Diarra wins, the whole transfer system has got to be rethought from A to Z. It's the balance of power in the transfer market will have to be rethought. Football would have to wake up and rethink the transfer system with a different founding principle, in which it's not FIFA and the clubs and the leagues which are the main people, but in which other stakeholders too have a say, starting with the players.
The early hours of Monday morning saw the Irish women's rugby team get a big win over world champions New Zealand in the WXV. Ali Donnelly tells us how important it is to capitalise on the growth of the sport right now.
Does it actually require in the short term to overachieve? So, for example, to repeat the feat this weekend against Canada in order for potential partners to take notice?
I mean, it doesn't hurt. That is an unfair kind of undue pressure to put on players. But of course, a winning team just naturally draws in momentum. You know, you talk about one of the things that's often held women's sport back is visibility and profile. And you get that when you're winning. And unfortunately, you know, that is just the reality. But I would like to think the kind of the way in which women's sport generally is evolving, you have more and more brands out there sitting up, taking notice, thinking, actually, there's a different kind of return on investment here for me. It might not be a million people watching on RT or whatever it is. It might be that you get much deeper engagement with a fan base and it's slightly different, but I'm willing to go with that because that's actually the way the sport's going. So we're at a really interesting time for women's sport and for investment. And, you know, we saw here in the UK, WSL last week doing a £15 million deal with Barclays. Now, women's football is obviously in a different place to rugby, but the opportunity is definitely there.
It's funny, Ali, you're talking about essentially a mind shift from the powers that be in a very traditionally fusty, conservative rugby unions. And I'm loath to draw too many parallels with the GAA situation at the moment, where what we're hearing is that the GAA are demanding $600 million to go ahead with the integration because there won't be enough facilities otherwise to allow the women to play in their facilities. And I can't get my head around why the GAA isn't like absolutely all over this because of, as you say, that deepening relationship that you can offer, not just to your own members who are crying out for this and who are largely going about this on a day-to-day basis in their own clubs, but also to the big brands who will actually finance all this in a recurring way over the next 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah, and it's 2024, right? You have to move with the times and evolve in a way that allows you to be kind of sustainable for the future. And investing in women is one of the ways of doing it. I mean, I work in motorsport. And we are doing something through my organization to try and help female drivers get to the top and eventually into F1. And that to motorsport into F1 is quite a scary proposition because the sport's doing, hey, they're doing pretty well commercially, right, at the top end of that sport. So why would we shake things up? And what I always say, and it's true of all sports, is this is not about changing this sport. It is about growing this sport. And I think that is the kind of mind shift that I will talk about to say, you know, this isn't a negative. It doesn't threaten the existing hierarchy or ecosystem or infrastructure. It's actually going to make you sustainable in 10, 20 years. So you best get on board now before you get left behind. I think that's the way I would frame it.
Ireland's second game in the WXV is against Canada this weekend, by the way, so keep an eye on the results of that. It seems like nothing much has changed for Manchester United fans. With Ten Hag under more pressure, one of the names linked to the job is Diego Simeone. Graham Hunter explained what you need to know and if there's any possibility of that happening.
So many of the comments are suggesting that this dip in form, what's going on at Man United, did he ever learn English? Is there a possibility that something like that might happen?
When he qualified for his first Champions League, which memory tells me was the season of 13-14, he knocked a very powerful Chelsea side out by winning at Stamford Bridge in memory from an Arda penalty, I think. And Chelsea immediately asked him if he wanted to take over. His sister is his representative, and he did want to take over. And he and his then assistant, what was a big, huge, pencil-thin goalkeeper at Mono Burgos, he became a rather more rotund assistant. He could speak English and pretty well. Cholo Simeone tried and tried and tried and could not get there. And he knows he's somebody who watched Gary Neville and learned from Gary Neville. Whatever kind of coach Gary Neville was going to be, he admits that the fact that on the Valencia Paterna training ground, the fact that he couldn't directly get his message through and he had to work through a translator, stripped away whatever vitality, whatever talent he might have been able to bring to the Valencia cause. Simeone knows that a lot of what you get from him is about that direct one-to-one communication, encouragement, the way he can get under players' skins. He's not technically, I don't think, and nor has he ever been the world's number one coach, much more of a man manager. And therefore, you strip away, you cut Samson's hair if you can't communicate in the language. And he has not ever been able to learn English. And I think you can count out him working in the Premier League, or at least working successfully in the Premier League. And the place where there's been siren songs for him is where he played for a couple of different clubs and won the title in Lazio. And that's Italy, Serie A so far. And who wouldn't be? He's been very happy in his fiefdom. Yeah. In Madrid, and until now, he's been very successful. No, you won't see him, I don't think, coaching in the Premier League.
Now, among some of the GAA rule changes, there's plans for a no-contact month in November for players of inter-county GAA. Tommy Rooney tells us what he thinks will happen with that.
There'd be no contact with your inter-county setup for the month of November, yeah. Right?
Don't think it's realistic.
Which?
I don't think it's possible or realistic. Like, I think it's cod. Like, to
why
be
not?
Honest, like, I just, because that is not going to happen. The only people losing out really are going to be players, like the younger players who are trying to break into a panel, who are going to, you know, go to session somewhere. Like, this is going to happen. Like, could you imagine new management teams coming in? We've got 10, 11, 12, some that aren't even appointed yet. Do you think there's going to be no contact in November? That's not going to happen.
Maybe
no collective sessions on the books,
yeah,
which can't be claimed expenses for. But, like, I suppose that's the keeping the county expenses down, the expenses for players down. I don't know who's winning or losing out there. Aidan O'Shea's taking January off. Aidan O'Shea's going to be playing for Mayo next year. There are plenty of players that go travelling who are established, that are older, that are able to manage their minutes. They're able to say to management teams, look, you know, if I'm back next year, I need first couple of weeks of the league off. Like, there's a bit of that happens already. There's players that are in the club action, they're not going to be involved in county action at that time either. But I just don't know if it's, I don't know if it's possible. I don't know if it's possible to have that within the current structure, especially when we haven't ironed out, I suppose, some of the issues with the calendar as well.
Okay.
What do you think?
I think that something, I think that too many managers don't look at their players as individuals and too much store by league form carrying automatically into championship form. I think of Kerry not giving Clifford more of a rest than they have done in recent seasons and thinking, what if he'd taken the whole league off 1 year? Would it have had any impact whatsoever on their outcome of the league? No. Would he have played potentially better, deeper into the championship? Potentially. We don't know. And I think that if, like, you look at the New Zealand rugby team, you give players sabbaticals and time off to do what they want. It worked really well for them in 2015. They came back fresh and played their best stuff ever. And nobody's kind of copied that template. The Dubs do. The Dubs have had players who are on individual training. And I know everybody has their individual training, but they're not asking everybody to do the same thing and slowly put players back into a league form. And it didn't work for them last year, but it did the previous season. So
I agree with you with the scenarios you picked out there, and some of the poster boys of the split season that have been hurt by the clubs having runs and rolling into their counties having big runs and they've been constantly injured. We know them. We've named them already in this show this morning. You know, Clifford, the Walsh, Sean Kelly, who's constantly been plagued since, you know, the split season's been introduced.
But I would give
that's
him,
very individual. But they're very individual scenarios. They should be managed by their counties. And the same way O'Shea is having January off
but
in Mayo.
Every squad has players of similar, and I think that maybe November is the wrong month. Maybe it should be October.
He made his name at the Summer Olympics with his great post-race interviews on the track. He's also Olympian himself. Did you know that? David Gillick told us what you need to know about the cost of being an elite athlete and what it's like to live with life after retirement.
The top funding is 40 grand if you can get to within touching distance of a podium or on the podium. So, like, 40 grand is 40 grand, okay? But, like, with the cost of living and everything that's involved in that, and to try and be the very best that you can be, it costs an awful lot of money. And you need external support, you need sponsors and all that. But to get the sponsors, you need exposure.
Yeah.
And it is hard. And, like, probably, you know, like, of the Irish team, like, realistically, there's a small percentage would be making money that could pay the bills. And you know, I'm not saying it's footballer terms where you have money in the bank and you can then retire and live happily ever after. It's not like that whatsoever, you know. It's like a lot of the people who I know who had good careers have had to find something post their athletic career in order to pay the bills and raise a family, you know?
What was that like for you? Was that hard?
Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah, terrible. Like, I went from 40 grand to zero on one phone call. And I was away at the time. I was injured and I was trying to get back. And I knew it was coming because I hadn't raced in like 2 years and injuries and all. And I was 30 as well. And, you know, again, when you're getting to that level, you have to hit higher performances, because they need to see you still competitive, yeah, and still making progress.
You're on the way up as opposed to on the way down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, look, the reality is it's high performance. Your contracts with sponsors stop, you know, because you're not performing and you're not hitting the numbers. And a lot of the contracts that a lot of our athletes would go through would have, like, significant cutbacks on them if you're not hitting numbers. So for an awful lot of athletes who didn't say, for whatever reason, didn't make the Olympic Games, like they will have like massive reductions in their contracts. And that's just the way it is. So, you know,
the pressure of that to perform.
And that's the other side of it. Yeah. So then pressure becomes, oh, no, like, you know, what, I'm injured now. I'm not going to hit the numbers. Then suddenly you're thinking about, well, how am I going to pay for next year? And there'll be a lot of people now sitting down post Paris, you know, what am I doing? Okay, where am I going? How am I going to fund this? If I'm going to go for another 4 years, what do I need to do in terms of actually creating an income? And for me, it was no different. Like I had no job when I'd finished. I couldn't even claim the dole because I wasn't paying stamps, you know?
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
I hadn't thought of that because it's obviously come from the government. And it's
come from the government and all that, you know? So you're limited in terms of what you can do. And I panicked. I completely, within 2 weeks, I had a job and I was working for a sports brand and I was based here in Dublin. And my team and everyone was based over in the UK. So I was by myself. And like it was the worst thing I could have done. But all, and I'm not ashamed to admit it, I focused on the money. That was it. I thought if I could get enough money, it'd be grand. And then I'd have status. And this is the other side of kind of coming to the end of a career, your identity. You know, who are you? For so long, like there's Gaelic the runner. Mm. Whereas now I'm like, who am I? Like, you know, how do I introduce myself to like a social setting? Oh, what do you do? Don't know. Like, you know. And it was horrible. Yeah, it was brutal. And then like, you're saying yes to things because you're trying to find the answer. You're searching for that answer. So I can remember like working Monday to Friday, and then I'd say yes to a load of kind of gigs at the weekend because one, there might be a couple of bob in it, and then second, I was like, it might lead to something. And then before you know it, it's Monday to Sunday and you're shattered, you're tired, you know?
Yeah, it was a brilliant you had to be there and great insight from David Gillick into the life of an athlete. It's well worth listening to the full thing over the weekend. So that's what you need to know from this week's sport. You can listen to the full interviews now on the Off The Ball app by becoming a member at offtheball.com/join. And don't worry, if you're not a member yet, just download the app, sign in, and you'll still get 3 free podcasts per month. And don't forget, of course, Off The Ball is free every morning by tuning in at 7:30 to our YouTube channel or listening to us on OTB Sports Radio. We'll be back Monday morning at 7:30 with all the reaction to the weekend's Premier League. Quinny will be in studio to talk rugby, and of course, we'll have the latest performance rankings. Have a great weekend.